Good morning. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy, Julia Kreutz with you. The Blue Jays hit a home run.
Did they? Did they win?
They did not win.
Oh.
They did not get many other hits or base runners. And the home run didn't come from one of the people you'd expect it to come from. Here's your deflating stat of the day. The Toronto Maple Leafs won last night. They're up 2-0 against the Ottawa Senators. Since that playoff series started, the Leafs have more than doubled the Toronto Blue Jays' goals to runs. Not great.
That can only come from the mind of Blake Murphy. That type of stat right there. Did you tweet it out too or no?
No.
That is very, very well done. And I'm a sucker for just, you know, sports intertwining a little bit. So I really appreciate that. But you are right that it is pretty depressing.
Yes. The Leafs scored 9 goals in 2 games against the Senators, who are not to be respected or feared or, you know, worried about a comeback in any way.
Stop
the
it.
Blue Jays have lost 4 games in a row. They have scored just 8 runs over those 4 games. Even if you go back to the last 2 wins, they've only scored 14 runs over the last 6 games. Last night, they only managed 2 hits. They have had 7 base runners over 2 games against the Houston Astros. And I said as we were signing off yesterday, look, Ronel Blanco's a good pitcher when he finds it. He came into this game with an ERA of like 6.5.
Yeah.
And I said as we signed off, if he no-hits the Blue Jays again, the tone of this show is going to be very, very different. He did not no-hit the Blue Jays, but he dominated them pretty, pretty well.
Yeah.
2 hits and 2 walks overall for the Blue Jays. Never really threatened whatsoever. And because the Astros hung 3 in the first inning, it felt we're back to the point of like not, okay, down 6 to the Mariners feels tough. Down 3 in the first inning felt like fait accompli. Like it's over at that point. And it's not actually, but that feeling is not a good one to have on April 23rd.
I agree with you. And I especially agree with you, Blake, that this is not a good feeling. It's not where we thought we were going to be. There was so much talk about change and about evolution and about guys going about it the right way. And we're still hearing that right now. Spring training went the way that it went. The golden grapefruit, the Blue Jays were on top of the world. It seemed like this was going to be a year where we actually saw changes, where we actually saw guys hitting the ball hard out of the gate and putting the ball in the air a little bit more. We mixed so many sports metaphors and we're just...
I would never do that.
And it kind of just feels like we're back where we were. It's unfortunate, and you hear John Schneider talk. You obviously know that they're still very into the process and what's happening right now, but it is not translating into wins. It is not translating into runs. At a certain point, it just starts to get old.
And this is the tough part about this is, like, it's quote-unquote only 24 games. You know, there's 138 more of these things. You can look at the process and hey, there's a lot of, you know, the sample size is still relatively small. But we talked about this a lot early last year when that would be the pushback to some of the offensive struggles. And that would come from the team and the front office, or it would come from, you know, the more optimistic in the fan base or whatever. And I kind of had to be like, well, no, it's not really, because like we had the back half of 2023 that informed our early 2024 mm-hmm. analysis. And now we have all of 2024, which also informs our analysis. And, you know, even if you think the Jays had a pretty solid offseason after you got past the Roky Sasaki, Juan Soto part, which, you know, they did fine once you got beyond that top tier, you know, the tongue-in-cheek quote about power being low-hanging fruit mm-hmm. that we heard on exit interviews and at winter meetings and stuff like that is hard not to look at and chuckle when... Again, they did hit a home run yesterday, so they're all the way up to 13. But 6 of those have come from Tyler Heineman, Miles Straw, Nathan Lucas, and Andrés Giménez. Like,
right.
It's so when it comes up that it's a small sample size, or it's still early, or and we'll talk about the quality of pitching they face, which is actually like a real factor when we're analyzing this. It's still not just 24 games, because we have all of last year that where some of the issues were the same. We have dating back to 2023 when the power started to dissipate from this team. And yesterday I even referenced, I pulled the projections for the rest of the season.
Yep.
If we assume guys are going to get back to being who they are, and they're still a bottom 10 power hitting team in that regard. So there just aren't a lot of good ways to spin that. Hey, at least the power side of this is like really going to turn around when the sample expands.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's the case, and that's fine. right? Blake, I asked you the question a couple of days ago. Is it just time to admit that, or to accept that this is who the Blue Jays are, just not a power team? You said yes, and that is okay.
It's okay-ish.
Yeah.
It's okay in the sense that you can acknowledge that,
right,
and you got to move forward being like, hey, this isn't going to be a team. Like, we got to stop analyzing this as if they're going to hit 200 home runs from here, because they might only hit 140 home runs from here, and that's a pretty big difference. It doesn't mean it's like I'm accepting it in that, like, this is a good way to build an offense.
No. As long as they keep having the good at-bats that we had been seeing early on, right? I think that is the biggest difference here. It's the fact that since that last win against the Mariners, it doesn't seem like the Blue Jays have actually been able to put together consistently good at-bats that allow them to wreak some havoc on the bases and score some runs. It's funny. Early on, when the Blue Jays were winning and John Schneider was talking about all the little things that were going right and guys buying into all the little things, and, you know, it makes you feel really good about how you're managing. It makes you feel really good about the makeup of the team and the identity and all of that. And it allows you to be a little more patient as you're also looking for those extra base hits and for those home runs, for those balls to actually leave the park. Now it seems like there has been a regression even in that sense, where, yes, we are seeing some good pitchers. I don't want to take anything away from Ronel, but there's nothing like facing the Blue Jays for Ronel Blanco. He just finds it. It's amazing.
This is also, and we can come back to your point about, like, you know, like, hey, hitting for batting average is great, but if you're not getting extra base hits, like, everyone has to be on a string. Like, everyone, you have to hit three in a row to get a run, whereas if you hit one home run, you only need one in a row.
There you go.
That's some quick analytics for you. But no, Ronel Blanco, you know, being the, and some of the Mariners pitchers got into a groove as well. It's, so when I used to play hockey, you know, Cambridge did not have like the greatest of hockey programs. Waterloo and Guelph and places like that would generally kick our butts. And you always really looked forward to, on the schedule, when we would play Flamborough.
Right.
Small town outside of Cambridge. No disrespect to the Flamborough Flames, but like, they're the team that you like circle on the schedule of like, hey, that's the one we're going to get right against. I'm going to, you know, get 5 or 6 points, pad my stats a little bit. Everyone comes out of it feeling good. You don't want to be the Flamborough Flames for the other teams in baseball, for other starting pitchers. And yes, they've run into, like, on name value, if we look at the stuff metrics and stuff like that, like, the Jays have faced the third or fourth hardest slate of pitching pitch by pitch over the course of the season. That's a real factor. But you also don't want to be the team that a guy with a 650 ERA comes in and is like, this is my night to find my groove. And like with Blanco last night, the Jays had Bo, Vlad, and Springer, I thought, in their first plate appearances, all had drivable pitches that they missed on.
That's
and
a good
then
point.
Blanco got settled in. And then it's like, okay, I've gotten through the order once. I'm two innings in, fairly pitch efficient. Like, now I'm in a spot. And that's where it's really tough, where, like, yes, Blanco was good.
Yes.
He is good. He has been good in the past. But you kind of gave him the first step he needed by not jumping on him before he found that groove.
Yeah, and that's not new, Blake. That's something that we are also seeing pretty much all season, even when they are hitting their singles, is the fact that there are so many of these pitches that just land in the middle of the plate and don't get swung on, or they're just, you know, fouled off or whatever. And like, Anthony Santander is a little bit of the illustration for that right now, but it's not just him. It is also, like you said, guys like Vlad and Bo, which for me does raise a few questions about approach and game plan and what it is that you are actually looking for, because when you get it, you're not doing anything with it. And so, and that's not even, you know, there's been a few breaking balls, just curveballs that land in the zone, some sliders, but it is also just fastballs in the middle of the plate. And it's just not amounting to anything. So yes, I believe that the process is there. Yes, I believe that there's reason to be confident that those results are going to come, but it would just be so much easier if, when you actually got a pitch to hit, you hit it. Maybe, you know, speed up the process a little bit.
And to kind of tie our two points together here, the early game stuff is, again, it's, there is technically a small sample of this season so far, but we talked about their first inning drought for like months last year.
That's true.
Where they couldn't score early in games. And a lot of that had to do with, well, Bo had such a bad season and Springer was struggling so much that he had to come out of the order. Vlad had the bad first 6 weeks or whatever. But it's still, you know, again, it informs our analysis this year that these were also problems last year. And shocker, like Bo being a little bit better and adding Anthony Santander, at least for now, has not completely remedied all the offensive issues. And like, yeah, Santander will turn around and things like that. Right now, though, like they, on an average day, their lineup has 6 of the 9 lineup spots with guys who have an OPS plus of 80 or below.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's 6 dead spots in the lineup right now. And no disrespect to any of those individuals, because they'll, you know, guys will turn around and things like that. But right now, Vlad, Bo, and Springer are the only guys who are hitting at even a league average rate when you factor in that, hey, there's more to this than singles.
So the Blue Jays struck out 7 times yesterday. Vlad struck out 3 times. Around this time last year, we saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. start to struggle a little bit more. Just unable to make good contact. And, you know, and then obviously it did turn around eventually. The contact was the first thing to come back, and then the power sort of followed. But before that, and again, I don't have many numbers to back this up yet, but I am curious. We saw him chase more. And we saw that again yesterday. He went after some sliders from Blanco, and Buck Martinez mentioned a lot during the broadcast that, you know, the spin is very tight on that slider, and so it's difficult for guys to pick it up out of the hand. Sure, and Blanco was pitching extremely well. But one concerning trend for me here is that instead of actually adding power to this, the Blue Jays are now, or they may see a regression on contact from Guerrero because he's pressing, because he needs to be the guy. And we're going to see a lot more swing and miss outside the zone.
Yeah, it's tough. His overall chase rate, you know, on the season so far is right in line with where it was last year, which is, you know, it's about league average. And when you factor in that he's a slugger type, you're like, yeah, you're okay with that. Similar to what we talked about with Springer.
For sure.
You know, guy who's striking out a little bit more to find a little bit more power. So overall, it's fine. But yeah, you look at like his second plate appearance when he got the 1-0 slider like way out of the zone. It's like, okay. And then he comes up in the sixth. And I have a lot more patience for that one. You know, you've worked a 2-2 count. You fouled one off. And it's like just low and away. It's like, okay, you were playing defense with that swing. But it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And it's such an interesting balance to try to strike, because we've talked about ourselves and with guests that, you know, hey, this super high contact-oriented approach, the stat I mentioned Chris Black and I were kicking around the other day, they are chasing more, but their contact rate when they chase is really, really high. And that can mean they're doing with it intent, but it also means you're creating a lot of outs before 2 strikes often. So, like, if you're Vlad and you're chasing that 1-0 slider outside the zone, it's not so much that you chase. It's like, what is the plan when it's 1-0 and there's a slider that far away? Like, again, I have more patience for a 2-2. You fouled one off. You get beat by a good pitch that's just outside the zone. You know, and then, yeah, his strikeout against Hader was just like he missed. That was like a sinker down the middle of the plate.
Yeah.
That's just you should have had that, and Josh Hader's good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something to monitor where, like, I don't think there's like a right answer. I do think anecdotally, when Vlad is in a mode where he is spitting on pitches that are just off the plate, like that's when I feel really confident about Vlad's plate appearances. And this is not a stats thing. This is just a feel when you watch him at the plate kind of thing.
Agreed. Clearly, Vladdy is at his best when he is seeing the ball well. He is not someone, he can chase if he wants to. He will still make contact. He's strong and he has the contact skills to do that. But this aspect of the game, and it's so elusive, right, Blake? You see guys talk about it as if it comes and goes, or as if there are different tiers to it, to seeing the ball well out of a pitcher's hand. George Springer mentioned it multiple times early on in the season when he was, you know, the Blue Jays' primary offensive contributor, in which, yeah, I am seeing the ball well right now, and that makes me feel good. It's good when, you know, the ball hits the grass and all of that. And so this is, I think, my worry is that when we start to see Vladdy chase, that maybe, you know, there is something that is impeding him from actually seeing the ball well here. And whatever that may be, it may just be the pressure to make something happen. It may just be, you know, a certain point in the season in which you do feel a little bit off with your swing and with your plate appearances. It may just be the pitcher. It's just, it's tough that there aren't or there haven't been many guys other than Vlad who have been able to pick that up. And maybe we will see everything click at once, Blake, a little bit later in the season. It's just it's tough to wait for that while the losses kind of mount and the Blue Jays are back to 500 and, you know, the Red Sox are suddenly good and are rising up. So, yeah, tough point in the schedule for the Jays.
So the other note on the quality of pitching that they face, and again, you take some of the blame when you let a guy like Ronel Blanco, who's been struggling, you miss a couple opportunities early, and then he gets that confidence and lets it build. But I mentioned they have faced on name, like on paper, like 8 really good starters in a row. They are 3rd or 4th in quality of pitches that they've seen if we take every single pitch. And that was something that Vlad last year was like among the league leaders because he faces the toughest relievers. Obviously, if you are Ronel Blanco, you are like, I got to bring my best stuff. And we'll see. When Anthony Santander comes around, you know, I'm not the biggest lineup protection guy. Like, I think it's a factor, but it's sometimes overrated as a factor. But if Anthony Santander starts cooking, maybe Vlad gets a little bit more because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to mess around and face a bigger threat with a man on base behind and things like that. Chris Bassitt was asked about this last night, and this quote is via Hazel May. He said, "We knew April was going to be hard for us. Just keep grinding. Don't panic about these stretches. We have to come out of April on a good foot. We're there. It would be better to face lower level pitches more than top guys over and over." So kind of, you know, doing the whole thing of like, yes, acknowledging that this is, we all knew it would be a tough schedule on paper. You and I had kind of set up, hey, if they could go 11-9 through this first 20 before Jays Talk Plus starts, that's not bad. They did that. And the rest of the month is still difficult. They're in New York this weekend, and the Red Sox are here who are playing really well. So if you can get through, if you can survive April, this was kind of always the thing. Santander is starting slow. The bats aren't there. If you can survive April, then you can kind of get rolling from there. So I think that's probably the mentality that the entire team is going to carry.
That's my mentality right now too, honestly.
Yeah, it's just like let's say they close out the month at 500. It will, given what we thought in late March when we set it all up, you would be like, okay, that's a tolerable outcome for the rest of the season, given the strength of schedule and things like that. It would still feel like you missed a couple opportunities though, and you could be in a better spot.
Totally.
Like the Red Sox are playing better, but it's not like the Yankees are like tearing the world. Like they're 2 games back. You could be right there if you hadn't, you know, you win one of the Mariners games, you get a hit in one of these Astros games, and maybe you're right there, you know?
Yeah. Listen, there is another opportunity today, and I don't want to look too far ahead here, Blake, because, you know, it has been pretty bleak in Houston, but Yankees pitching is not where it once was. And you kind of look at what's
ahead.
You're
not afraid of Carlos Carrasco on Friday?
Come on. But this is, you know, you look ahead, and with the way that things are going here, you will forgive me for looking ahead to the weekend, but it seems like this could be a potentially, you know, game-changing or season-turning or month-turning opportunity for the Jays to actually gain some ground on the Yankees and do
those things. Can always go the other way too, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. When it comes to pitching, though, I will put my money on the Jays for any of those games.
Yeah, and like Max Fried is a tough out, but like unless the Yankees juggle their rotation, you're going to see Carrasco and Schmidt. And Schmidt's been off to a bad start since coming back off the IL. Carrasco shouldn't be in a major league rotation probably at 38. You know, he's had an ERA up above 6 3 years in a row now. So, but again, Ronel Blanco also came in like that. And these guys, like, you don't, yeah, I'm not, it's a, there's a, I'm misquoting him, but Joe Siddle has made this point before that like strength of schedule or quality of opponent or stuff, things like that, it's fluid because guys and teams go through better stretches and worse stresses. But also, like, if you catch Carlos Carrasco when your bats are bad, that's different than catching Carlos Carrasco when everyone's hitting. So maybe Carlos Carrasco ends up being the Flamborough Flames.
Yes.
But maybe you are the Flamborough Flames.
Oh, boy.
And Carlos Carrasco has, you know, his first real good start since like 2021 or something.
Hey,
like that.
Everything is cyclical. And yeah, you're right. What can't keep happening, Blake, in my opinion, is games like yesterday in which felt like the Blue Jays kind of were just beat at their own game, right? There was a ton of a ton of singles from the Astros, some sac flies, some movement on the bases, mm-hmm. some luck involved for sure. They did all the little things right, and then they played good defense on the other end. They beat the Blue Jays at their own game. That's what can't keep happening.
Yeah, and it's also like okay, they only needed two runs to beat the Blue Jays. Like, I feel for Chris Bassitt yeah. because he wasn't as good as he'd been in some of these other games, but they strung together so many softly hit balls that were like right on the edge. Like Christian Walker and Jose Altuve both hit ground ball singles that were about 100 miles an hour. Chris Bassitt said to Hazel after the game, he doesn't think he allowed a hard hit ball all day. If we factor in that 100 on the ground isn't that deadly,
yeah.
like, yeah, 100 on a line, sure. But like, those are well hit ground balls that got through. That's it. Everything else was softly hit. All the hits in that big first inning that piled up on him were on the edge of the strike zone, except I think the one to Christian Walker mm-hmm. caught a little bit too much plate. Everything else was like, oh, here's a two-seamer right in at your hands. Here's a curveball that drops just below the zone. And they just kind of dinked and dunked their way to it. So you feel a little bit for Chris Bassitt. The other thing Bassitt said was he thought they were on the sweeper and he should have thrown his curveball a little bit more. Yainer Diaz's RBI double in the sixth, that was kind of a big insurance run, was on a sweeper that was on the outer edge, but it didn't get low enough. It kind of hung up there a little bit. There were randomly two back-to-back hit by a pitch. But overall, I didn't think, like, I think Bassitt just kind of got like bled in an unlucky way in the first inning. And otherwise, he was pretty solid.
He was. It's funny, Blake. Sometimes I think about, you know, this show will eventually go to 2 hours. We're doing 1 hour right now, 11 to 12. But sometimes I think to myself, man, 2 hours, that's a lot, right, to fill in for a show. And then I watched last night's game and I was like, man, I wish we could do a whole segment on that curveball.
Yeah.
Because it was making guys look foolish. And not just the Cam Smiths or Jeremy Pena or, you know, guys who have had maybe a little bit less experience. It was making Jose Altuve look foolish. Future Hall of Famer Jose Altuve. So that to me, yeah, you know, you look back and you're like, I should have thrown the curveball more. Maybe they were on the sweeper a little bit. But again, it's the surprise factor with Chris Bassitt a little bit too. Obviously it was on and it was moving really, really well. But it's the fact that major league hitters don't necessarily expect that that very, very slow curveball that he throws. And man, did it work for him yesterday. And then Brandon Little comes in. And
yeah.
He's got the wicked knuckle curve. I was like, let's just do a whole segment on curveballs.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We have all summer and yeah, 2 hours gives you lots of time to go deep. I did have Brandon Little in my notes. So we'll talk a little bit more Chris Bassitt with Mike Petriello in the second segment. He was on Blue Jay Central last night and talking about some of what has made Bassitt's sub-2 ERA start to the season so impressive. Brandon Little came in and got a couple quick outs to help Chris Bassitt out of that sixth inning, out of that sixth inning. Brandon Little on the season now mm-hmm. has a 41% strikeout rate. So 41% of the batters he faces have struck out. That's impressive. What's incredibly impressive is that 57% of the swings against Brandon Little have missed. 57% of the time, if you swing at a Brandon Little pitch, you're coming up empty. That is, we could talk small samples all you want. If you do that over one outing, I'm over the moon. That's enough sample for me. That knuckle, the sinker is such a heavy pitch, and he led the league in ground ball rate last year. Great weapon to have. Good to have a double play guy out of the bullpen. But if you are going to be a leverage reliever, you have to miss bats, and that knuckle curve is just, guys can't square it up whatsoever.
Yeah, it's been really, really, really cool to watch. Certainly the pitching as a whole for the Blue Jays has been a huge positive, but guy like Brandon Little, you didn't really anticipate, or at least I didn't, like, to see him in as many high leverage situations as we have seen Brandon Little. It's just the confidence is so there, and he had one kind of tough outing in a high leverage spot early on, and then he settled in, and you just don't talk about it anymore. It's you don't even raise an eyebrow to see Brandon Little come up against a team that has one left-handed bat. It doesn't matter. And that is really, you know, one credit to the Blue Jays for recognizing that, sticking with him, and just giving him this opportunity. But, man, credit to him for trusting his stuff and just fine-tuning the heck out of it. It's been so good.
And improving the stuff. Like, he's a guy that the Jays added him in the offseason between 2023 and 2024. And I, you know, I dug in on the profile. I'm like, okay, I don't really get it. Like, ERA is above four as a reliever at AAA, like, okay, strikeout rate, but a lot of walks and things like that. And then suddenly it's like, okay, well, he's figured out how to get elite ground ball rates. And it's like, okay, there's a role for a guy like that. But yeah, again, if you're going to be a leverage guy, if you're going to be a reliever that is someone you care about, that's not on the back end with the DFA and the 40-man churn and stuff like that, like so many guys are in the league now, yeah, you have to have that swing and miss stuff too. So yeah, that knuckle curve has been cool to see come along. He's also trimmed the walks a little bit relative to his minor league career, which is helpful, because if you make a mistake and no one's on base, it's a little easier to live with. And no reliever is free of home run troubles. So, yeah, great to see from Brendan Little. Last one from last night's game for you before we take a break and talk to Mike Petriello. Anthony Santander sat out this one. He got a breather. Is your read on that, that's maybe, you know, kind of like a mental day, given he's hitting .196 through his first 23 here?
Maybe, yeah. You know, difficult schedule for sure. A road trip is always going to be a little bit tougher. There's a big series against the Yankees coming up, and sometimes guys do very, very well with that one day off. It's a little bit of wishful thinking if that is actually what it is, but for whatever reason, it does seem to work, where guys just take a day, watch from the dugout, and then they're back, and they do look a little bit more like themselves. Christian Walker got one recently.
Yeah.
And now he's hitting everything, right? He was great yesterday.
Although he got one after he had the big breakthrough hit on the weekend and then got Monday off, right?
You know what? In that case, I will apologize.
No, you don't need to apologize. It's just the exception that proves the rule.
But that has been, you know, just something that you anecdotally observe.
Yeah.
Guys get a day and it seems to help for whatever reason. I don't know about you, Blake, but when I get a day off, I come into work and I perform better the next day. That's just the way that it goes. And for a professional athlete, there's no reason to believe that would be any different. It is still on Santander to figure it out. He did seem very, very lost at the plate during that Mariners series, but the Blue Jays are going to do what they can to help him get back to who he is. And if a day off will help with that, then yeah, they should probably try it.
Yeah, my sample size for day offs for me is too small to really judge. You know, the data is not great on how I perform after a day off because they're so infrequent.
For you personally.
Yeah.
What did you think of Santander sitting?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, fine, whatever. It's not like he's hitting right now anyway. With off days Thursday and Monday, I was kind of like, well, the guys are going to have a lot of, like, the hitters especially have a lot of natural rest built in this next week. I kind of probably would have just, like, I'd rather him get the at-bats, mm-hmm. rather him try to find it. But I haven't talked to Anthony Santander about, you know, how this is maybe an unfair question to have asked you. Because, yeah, I would like to know his opinion on it. And we're not there. We're not in Houston. So.
No, it's all good. I think it's a fair question. And obviously when you see his name is not in the lineup and you look on Twitter and you're trying to figure out what's happening, questions arise, right? And obviously no one is at 100% anymore at this point. But, yeah. I don't know. It's a breather, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see. He'll be back in there today. I'm sure they will try to hit Ryan Gusto, who throws six different pitches. He will lean heavily, heavily, heavily on a 94-mile-an-hour fastball that does some tricky stuff from a shape perspective. But yeah, he's also going cutter, changeup, sweeper, sinker, curveball. Sound familiar? So yeah, Gusto against Bowden Francis. We'll see if we have time to set that one up for you. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Petriello about what's made Chris Bassett's start so strong this year. We'll do a couple other things around Major League Baseball, including, hey, if the Blue Jays get a runner on base tonight, the Astros have not thrown out a base stealer yet this season. What the heck is going on with them? We'll talk to Mike Petriello about it as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy, Julia Kreutz with you. And we're joined now by my good pal, Mike Petriello of MLB.com, of Blue Jays Central. Mike, I will let you know ahead of time, all of the stats that I have for this segment. I just asked AI to pull stats from Stack. I know that's a thing that you love, and it always gets the answer right 100% of the time.
How do I change this interview so I get an AI, Blake, and I don't have to talk to the real one? Because I'd be very interested in that.
Hey, I've been asking myself that, too, for a couple weeks now.
You guys are out of luck. There's no... If you don't have regular intelligence, they can't artificially simulate it. So, Mike, great job on Blue Jay Central last night. And it's so great that you're back on tonight. We won't spoil what you're talking about tonight, but you went in last night a little bit on what's made Chris Bassitt so successful early this year. He got BABIPped a little bit last night, but still a very, very strong start to the season overall. What have you seen from Bassitt in the early going here?
Yeah, I got to say, I was watching the game last night and I was very disappointed he didn't strike out 10, because if he did, I was going to pitch like an article, I was going to write about him, and now it just feels not as interesting. But it's cool because he is the kind of guy who, like, I don't know him personally, he seems very inquisitive and very intelligent and always trying to refine his craft. And if you have a guy in his late 30s who ups his strikeout rate, at least entering last night, from 22% to 33%, that's fascinating. And it's really about just pitching smarter. Like, he stopped throwing some pitches that weren't very good, his regular slider and his changeup. You don't see that much. He moved over on the mound like an entire foot towards the third base side, and he dropped his arm angle. And when you do that, all of a sudden he's getting this insane break on his sweeper. He's added like several inches of sweep on that sweeper. And again, I don't have the box score from last night in front of me, so maybe this has changed. But at the time, he had not yet allowed an extra base hit to a right-handed hitter all year long, because it's sinkers inside and sweepers outside. And at a certain point, it's not always about more velocity or the next sexy big pitch. It's what can I do to make the pitches I have look even better? And that's exactly what he did.
Unfortunately, Yiner Diaz did get him for a double on a sweeper. Mm.
So he wasn't going to last forever.
Yeah, no. He has now allowed an extra base hit to a righty. Sorry, buddy.
That's a shame. That's still pretty good, though.
So when we look at Bassitt and what's made him successful this year, you mentioned it. Hey, some of this is cutting back on pitches that aren't working. You know, we talk all the time about he's an 8-pitch guy mixing in, but he's really been a 4-pitch guy against righties this year. Yordan is the only lefty you saw last night, so not a great sample there. When you look at that with Bassitt and the how much he's leaned on the sinker against righties, and then we kind of zoom out to macro trends in the league early on so far here, you actually wrote about kind of the sinker usage isn't up, but guys are using it really, really effectively now. Bassitt, also a guy that mixes in cutter and four-seamer, so we're seeing more of these three fastball-type guys. What can we learn kind of about that trend in the league through the lens of Bassitt so far here?
Yeah, it's not always about working harder and throwing harder. It's about working smarter. And I think the sinker is really interesting to me, because if you've been around baseball for long enough, you remember when, you know, pitch low in the zone, get those ground balls. That was the way to success, right? And then teams that continue to do that for too long got kind of laughed at. Like, we all made fun of the Pirates for a while because they kept trying to do this when it wasn't a good idea anymore, because everybody was going to spin rate and the high spin four seamers and the sweepers and splitters and everything. And I wouldn't say the sinker is necessarily back in the sense that we're not seeing more of them. We're just seeing them used more effectively. So a metric I always like to look at is run value, which is simply what is the value of the pitches you're throwing, because it accounts for every pitch. You know, there's value in getting ahead in the count, even if that doesn't end the plate appearance. And for like an entire decade, sinkers were this hugely negative value pitch for pitchers, to the point of like thousands of runs per season. And over the last couple of years, they've actually gotten back up to zero. And this year, and I think the last two seasons, they are a positive value pitch for pitchers. And the reason is pretty simple. There's two reasons I would point to. Number one, they're not using them to opposite-handed hitters as much. Like, sinkers are the kind of pitch that are very much a platoon pitch. You want to throw it to same-handed hitters. If you're a righty, you want to throw it inside to righties. And just like every other kind of pitch, they've gotten really nasty. Like, they're faster and they're moving more and they're not really thrown low in the zone. They're more up in the zone and in to try to get on the hands of hitters. And I just find that also interesting. It's not really the same kind of, I don't know, Dallas Keuchel pitch we saw 10 years ago. It's how can we make this two-seam sinker pitch super duper nasty and use them only in the situations that are probably going to work out. And that's what's happened.
Yeah, it's funny to see, I guess, the rise of something like a specialty pitch, right? You're going to use it at a certain point, and you need to be really, really good at it so that you can do it. And, you know, these trends obviously come and go. Hitters are going to adjust back. That is just kind of the nature of the game, Mike. But then you see guys who are throwing three different fastballs, as Blake mentioned, and just the different movements that generates. I'm wondering, first of all, you know, if that is also a trend that we're seeing league-wide, how difficult that is to accomplish, because it does involve a ton of command and just, you know, deception when the ball comes out of the hand, and what that is doing, what you're seeing league-wide from that lens.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny whenever you use the phrase analytics, right? People get freaked out. They start to hate it. Oh, it's ruining baseball. And sometimes it can be super duper fancy space age technology. And sometimes it's as simple as, hey, we looked at pitch usage and we think you'd be a lot better if you just threw these pitches in this situation. And like the same kind of thing that pitching coaches have been doing for 140 years. Sometimes that's all it is. It's just getting to what works best. And one of the things that we have learned works pretty well is if you have a sinker or a four-seamer or a cutter, to use all of them at the same time. Like everybody who's adding a sinker, and we've seen a lot of guys talking about adding a sinker, almost none of them, maybe not even any of them, have added it and said, this is my new primary pitch. I'm not throwing the four-seamer anymore. They've pretty much all added it and said, well, I'm going to add it to my four-seamer and to my cutter. And so now I'm going to have like a triangle's worth of pitches where I'm going to throw them and they're all going to look kind of the same till halfway to the plate. And then they're going to do something ever so slightly different. And that's going to screw with the batter. And this is what we're really seeing. Like, I believe the number I had was the number of pitchers who were using all three of those pitch types has doubled in just like the last three seasons. And it's wild to think, we think about how pitching has changed since, I don't know, the 60s, the 80s. I've seen articles from both Juan Soto and Brandon Nimmo saying, man, pitching has changed so much just since like 2018. It's gotten so much harder in like the last 6 years. And I do think that's a little bit underrated. This is not just a decades long change. It's a very recent change. It gets harder every single year.
And there are so many competing factors in it where, you know, the Red Sox were notable last year of like, unless you're Nick Pivetta, you don't get to throw a four seam. Like, we're going to go sinker and cutter. And like, you can logically like, yeah, if I throw 98, I could probably get away with just a four seam. If I'm Chris Bassitt and my velocity's down to 91, even if I've got that really sharp arm side run on my sinker, I better keep someone off the scent with something that moves in a different profile, or I can spot around the zone a little differently.
It's like my favorite thing. Bassitt is what, like 36 or 37 in his late 30s, and his velocity is down. And if I knew nothing else about him but that, I would be horrified. I'd be like, oh God, this isn't going to go well. And he's been fantastic. Just because of the way he has changed the way he's pitched. And I think as we all talk about, you know, how do you keep pitchers healthy? The number one thing I think we know is true is if you throw 120% of the time on every single pitch, that's probably the number one biggest red flag. And if there is ever going to be a way to solve that issue, I think kind of what Bassitt is doing is to show that there are many different ways to get guys out that don't involve throwing as hard as you can every single time. And I think that's fascinating. We've had this sport for 200 years and we're still learning new ways to pitch. And it's like my favorite thing about it.
Yeah, Bassitt's certainly at the forefront of the Blue Jays pitching success. But Blake and I were also talking about Brandon Little, a reliever who kind of came out of nowhere. And it seems like all he does is miss bats, especially with that knuckle curve. It's been really, really awesome to see that development for him, Mike. And I'm just wondering what you've seen from him, and is what we're seeing right now sustainable in any way, shape, or form?
Brendan Little, a pitcher who I definitely knew was not Luke Little and definitely remembered pitched on the Blue Jays a little bit last year, as long as there are no follow-up questions, has been insane. So he has, in the curveball right now, that is the number one swing and miss pitch in baseball, if you look at whiff rate. And the thing that's most fun about it is he's got two pitches in the top 10 because his sinker is up there too, which is obscene. And that's not going to last. Like, let's not pretend this is what's going to happen all year long. But he's got a couple of interesting things happening. The first is, and I just looked this up a little bit ago, so he throws a cutter and a sinker and a curveball and nothing else. And I have not been able to find a single other pitcher in the major leagues who does exactly that. Everyone else throws, you know, a splitter or a four seam or whatever. Nobody at all throws just those three types of pitches together. And I think that goes a little bit to deception, right? A batter has never really seen this before. There are guys like Jose Alvarado who are similar, but they throw some four seamers. So right away, if you can say, hey, I do something nobody else does, that's really cool and interesting to me. The other thing that's changed at least a little bit in the last year or two that I can tell is, so his sinker right now has the number one spot on the list in terms of most extra drop, right? Who is sinking more than you would expect. Number one. And that's really cool. And if you go back and you look at the previous years of his career, including when he's with the Cubs, you can see he has added some seam shifted wake to that pitch. Let's get a little bit fancy here. That's just the science of how you use the seams on the ball to catch the air and make you could say it's a grip measurement tool if you wanted to. And I haven't gone so far as to try to look at his grips, and I couldn't tell you exactly what he has or hasn't changed, but it has about tripled since when he was with the Cubs, the number of his sinkers that catches the seam shifted wake, which leads to some unexpected movement. So you got a guy throwing in a way nobody else does, in a pitch that moves in the way nobody else does. And right away, that's really interesting to me. And I don't know how long it can keep up, but so far it's not totally a fluke, because if you can do those things, you're probably doing something right.
Yeah, and we'll have to see, you know, once guys have a book on him, how well does he deceive if it's curveball or sinker? Because individually, you mentioned the knuckle curve has the highest whiff rate. He had a 71% ground ball rate last year, primarily just being like, here's the sinker. Even if you get it, it's going to go to a fielder. I've got Andrés Giménez behind me now. Like, do your worst putting the ball on the ground. So, you know, in theory, it's like, okay, well, he has this one unbelievable ground ball pitch and this one unbelievable swing and miss pitch. Now we'll see just how far he can extend using those two without, you know, someone sitting on one or the other, or, you know, again, how they tunnel off of each other or deceive or whatever. Because, yeah, and not only is it like no one throws these two things in combination, but like Pierce Johnson's the only guy in the league who throws more curveballs, period. Like, you just don't see guys throw 45% curveballs. It's pretty rare package.
Yeah, and listen, it's April 23rd, right?
Yeah.
So this is the kind of analysis you have to look at. You can't look at ERA, really. You can't look at for a reliever wins and losses pretty much ever. You can just look at, hey, what kind of pitches does he throw? What do they do? Because that's the sort of thing that is meaningful in like three pitches as opposed to weeks and weeks and weeks of stuff. And that's why, again, I'm not saying he's going to have two of the best swing and miss pitches all year long. I would almost guarantee he won't. But the fact that he's done it for like an entire month of the season, that's meaningful for a reliever.
Yeah, it's passing the eye test for sure as well.
Yeah.
It's been great development for the Blue Jays.
So too early to look at anything ERA related, especially for a reliever. Is it too early to say the Houston Astros have a problem in that against the Toronto Blue Jays, nobody's gotten on base, so it hasn't been a problem. But the Houston Astros just do not throw runners out. They're already -4 caught stealing above average. The combination of Yiner Diaz and Victor Caratini have, I guess, technically two caught stealing, but they were like run down back pick kind of things. They have, like, on a pure stolen base attempt, not thrown a guy out this year. What's going on there, man? Like, obviously George Springer even stole second and third in the same plate appearance the other night. How worried should the Astros be here?
Yeah, a technical caught stealing is the best kind of caught stealing. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I talked about this on Blue Jays Central last night a little bit. And I was like, yeah, you know, two caught stealings, that's the worst in baseball. And then if you watch the videos, they're actually really funny. One of them didn't even result in an out. I don't know if you caught that part. They did a pickoff, and Brandon Nimmo would have been out, but there was an error on the second baseman. So it still gets scored as a caught stealing, even though the out wasn't actually made, because baseball scoring is weird sometimes. And then the other one was, yeah, a busted rundown that the out was at home or whatever. So, you know, I think baseball knowledge has progressed to the point where most people know you steal off the pitcher, right? And then some of the Statcast metrics over the last couple of years have really been able to show that. You do steal off the pitcher more than the catcher, except for these guys, because the pitchers are kind of average. They're not great, but they're not bad at holding runners on. And the two catchers here have two of the five worst pop times in baseball. And so pop time is just the amount of time it takes to get ball popping in your glove to ball popping in the infielder's glove. The arm strength is fine. The exchange is awful. And that's really the amount of time it takes to get the ball out of your glove. And if you watch some of the videos of some of the stolen bases, especially Diaz, I think more so him than Caratini, he's almost like falling off to his side when he's trying to throw. It takes him forever to get the ball out of the glove. So while I'd love to say, hey, catchers, it's not your fault, no, in this case it is. And I really feel like teams ought to be stealing 112% of the time they can, until they prove otherwise.
Yeah, Jay's just got to get someone on
base first. Yeah, that would be a big start.
Can't steal first base yet.
Yes. The other side of this is, so, you know, through the lens of the Blue Jays and Jay's Astros part three tonight, the Blue Jays have actually done a pretty good job. And if you look at, you know, if you were to say, hey, Alejandro Kirk improved controlling the run game this year, probably the first thing you'd think is, well, his arm got a little better. Not the case. Him and Heinemann don't have like unbelievable arms, but they've been two caught stealing above average. And where Kirk's really improved is in his pop times, where he's like borderline top 15 in pop time now, where he was really weak before. how notable is a change in pop time or transfer time? Like we talked about how early it is. Should we be buying that the Jays have maybe found a way to improve what was like a minor weakness last year?
Possibly, but you would need to look at everything, right? So it could it be that the pitchers are doing a better job of holding guys on, right? Are they getting shorter leads off of first base? Are the pitchers quicker to the plate? You know, there's new pitchers, right? Perhaps someone who was here last year was really bad at this, and someone who's new is great at this. This is all information that exists. You know, you can go up, look it up on Statcast and Baseball Savant. I would say that it's pretty rare in my experience to see that a catcher goes from really, really poor at this to really, really good. And if they do, it generally comes with kind of a negative knock-on effect. A great example would be with the Dodgers, right? Will Smith, 2 years ago, was brutal at this. Could not throw out anybody. Last year, he got really good at it, but everything else suffered. Like, his blocking got worse, and his framing got worse. And at the end of the day, I know that people generally like to evaluate catchers based on caught stealing. It just doesn't matter as much as you'd think, right? Blocking the ball matters more. Framing the pitch absolutely matters more. The pitcher has a huge amount of say in this. So while I do think it's possible to improve a little bit, I'm not really buying a massive, huge change in the catchers, at least for the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting to note. And like you said, the shared credit, shared blame, that kind of stuff. And anytime we're talking stolen bases, it's a small-ish sample. A large-ish sample right before we let you go here, Mike. Jesse Chavez is back with the Atlanta Braves.
Come on.
Do we just need to, like, there's a 40-man roster, but then, like, there's a 41st spot where, like, the Miami Heat had Udonis Haslam on the roster for, like, 20 years, and he barely ever played. Like, the Braves just get a Jesse Chavez slot. I don't know what we do here. It's comical, his transactions page.
This implies that Jesse Chavez ever left the Atlanta Braves. He's like Schrodinger's pitcher. He is both always there and not there. And I will go on record in guaranteeing this. This will not be the last time this happens. I'm 100% certain of this. They'll need a roster spot. They'll cut him loose because they'll know he's probably not going to go sign with the Rockies or whatever. And then they'll be like, oh, hey, we need a fresh arm for a couple of days. Jesse, you chilling? You want to come pitch? And he'll be like, yeah. I think he's already said this is his last season, right? So he's not going to probably go start.
He's almost 42. We'll
great. I mean, I wish I am almost not that much older than he is, and I would like for him to pitch forever, but I don't think that's going to happen.
But if he does, it'll be with Atlanta. He's not going anywhere else at this point. Mike, thanks so much for doing this, man. Looking forward to seeing you on Blue Jay Central again tonight.
Thanks a lot, friends. Take care.
Thank you. That was fun.
Mike Petriello, MLB.com. And yeah, Blue Jay Central again tonight. Great stuff on Bassett and the Astros run game last night. Not to spoil, but I'd imagine the Brandon Little topic might come up again tonight on Blue Jays Central.
I would expect so. It has been extremely impressive. It's funny, you look at his early outings, they were very effective in that he was just getting awkward contact and just pitching five pitch innings, it seemed like. And now we're seeing the swing and miss. And it does make you wonder, one, how sustainable it is, but two, how he is going to adjust if guys, start fighting back a little bit.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. Okay, if I were on Blue Jay Central, what they usually have me do is run you down the opposing pitcher. So let's take a quick look at Ryan Gusto. He is 26. He has made 6 appearances in his major league career, including 2 starts. 3.18 ERA, good underlying numbers, pretty decent strikeout rate. Doesn't really walk anyone. All the pitch design metrics like the shape on his pitches, especially a fastball that's only 94, but he'll throw it like almost 60% of the time. Graded out really well in the minors, and then he complements it with cutter, changeup, sweeper, sinker, curveball. He will not throw all of those to lefties, but he'll mix them all in to righties. And so far, tiny sample over those 17 innings in the majors, but guys hitting just 121 against the fastball, even though, again, it's only a 94-mile-an-hour piece. He will go up against Bowden Francis, who has a 3.13 ERA through 4 starts this year, but some troubling underlying things. The splitter hasn't been as good. The curveball hasn't been as good. And because his fastball is an elite, you know, maybe he can't overcome that. So he has a 6.50 expected ERA. Too early to get too worried about that, but it does tell you that the underlyings are not great. Also not great, the Astros are 12 for 27 against him with a 7.78 slugging percentage. He has not had a lot of luck against the Chaz McCormick's, Yiner Diaz, and Jeremy Pena's of the world.
I did not know that. We have seen Francis rely on the defense quite a bit. The defense failed him during their last road trip. So if those are the numbers, yeah, you're right. That's a little bit of something to watch here.
Yeah, it's also, we've seen a couple different versions of Bowden Francis in his short major league career. So maybe he's a little better today. That one is at 7:40, not 8:10 like the last two. Blair and Barker will have you 2-4 and post game. Ben Buck and Hazel on the call. Jamie, Joe, Caleb, and Mike Petriello on Blue Jay Central. And then Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, and Julia Kreutz on the radio side. Thanks to Mike Petriello for joining us, to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Julia, double duty tonight. You ready? You ready to host the heck out of Game 3 here?
I have to be. We'll see you there.
Not to add work to your plate, but I hope there are Astros pitching changes for you to fill, because that would mean the Jays got hits. Have a wonderful Wednesday.